Hello, this is Dr. Larry Wilson. The subject of this tape is anxiety and panic attacks. And it's a very interesting subject. It's a very common complaint. And it's an interesting one because the method that I've been working with for the past 20 years, hair mineral analysis, is very helpful to identify what's going on and correct a number of causes of anxiety and panic attacks. And I think I'll start the tape out by talking about a case history, which was rather interesting. It was one of the early ones when I just started doing this work myself. By the way, I have also dealt with anxiety, and so I've experimented with some of the methods, a number of the methods that I'm going to talk about. The case history was that of my secretary at the time. This was almost 20 years ago. When I had just started out in hair analysis, I didn't have too much faith in it. I was working with Dr. Paul Eck, who's a brilliant biochemist, had researched hair analysis, done several hundred thousand of them, and he was very knowledgeable in physiology and biochemistry. And I was sort of checking the whole thing out in my nutritional counseling practice at the time. The secretary's mother had agoraphobia, and she had hardly left her house in the past 13 years. And I never met the woman. She lived in Connecticut. We were in Arizona. I never even spoke to her on the phone. However, we got together a kit for cutting hair, and we sent it to her. We got her hair analysis back, and it showed what we call slow oxidation and elevated copper level. We sent her supplements, and within 6 months, this woman had her life back. She was able to go out and live a normal life. It literally gave her life back. Needless to say, I was impressed, even though I didn't necessarily understand exactly what was going on. But it was an interesting case history, especially the idea that you could do this by mail, which was all new to me, that I had never met the patient at all, and yet I knew a lot about her. So with that introduction, let's go on and talk about the aspects of anxiety and panic attacks that we can deal with through nutrition. I'll spend a lot of time talking about hair analysis and what it can show and how it can be used to guide correction. We'll also talk about food allergies. We'll talk about bowel problems. We'll talk about the effects of stimulants and poisons of various kinds. We'll talk about lifestyle. We'll talk about mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of anxiety and panic attacks. And finally, we'll talk about other natural therapies and how they might interact with nutrition and lifestyle to help correction. Okay. The hair analysis is interesting because there are a number of patterns on a mineral test. When the test is performed correctly, this is very important. It's important that the test not be washed, that the hair not be washed at the laboratory, and it's important how the test is interpreted. And this is why I only recommend analytical research labs, because most of the laboratories wash the hair or they use different interpretation methods, and you won't get this information from it. So let's talk about some of the patterns. A very common pattern for anxiety is something called fast oxidation. This is indicated when the calcium-magnesium levels are lower relatively than the sodium and potassium levels. And there are different kinds of fast oxidizers. There are what we call true fast oxidizers, and then there are temporary fast oxidizers. But in either case, but particularly the true fast oxidizers, anxiety is very common. Why? Well, this pattern is associated with what we might call the fight or flight reaction. It's an alarm stage of stress, and a person is sort of just geared up to fight or flight. Now, it's perfectly okay to gear up for fight or flight if you actually have to fight or run, you know, if there's a tiger in your path or something, or if you're running away from a speeding train or somebody, you know, is chasing you. However, what happens is that people get stuck in this state, and they're in it all the time. And this, besides wearing out your body chemistry, creates anxiety. This is a permanent kind of anxiety state. I mean, it comes and goes depending on what's going on. And we find this in children, and we find it sometimes in adults as well. More commonly, you see it in children. They get very active. It gets worse when they get tired. They get very wound up. They can fly off the handle. They can cry very easily, and so forth. We don't call it anxiety in children, but they're anxious and nervous and irritable. And in adults, it can be chronic anxiety. It can become acute anxiety if the oxidation rate speeds up. Calcium and magnesium are two of what we call the sedative minerals. They have a calming, relaxing effect on the nervous system and on the muscles. And in fast oxidizers, they are deficient. They are low. They're low for a reason. The body actually eliminates them through the urine, you know, excretes them in greater quantities because it gears up the body for fight or flight. In other words, it kind of puts everything on alert. The entire nervous system is on alert, on heightened awareness, which again is great if it's a temporary thing and you have to run very fast, but it's not good when it becomes chronic, and that's what happens with many fast oxidizers. They're in a chronic state of alertness or alarm. The cause of the chronic state can be various things, but often it's toxic metals, the presence of toxic metals. It can be a mental, emotional cause. It can be a deficiency of some essential nutrients. These people need copper. They need zinc. They need calcium, magnesium. They need a number of nutrients. It can be dietary caused. Sugar, eating sugar and sweets and too much carbohydrates makes these folks much worse. And so actually, the way we look at it, the more places we can break their cycle, break the fight or flight cycle in the fast oxidizer, the sooner and the more effectively we can get them out of that state. An analogy of a fast oxidizer would be somebody who tends to keep their foot on the gas pedal all the time in the car, and they're just going too fast, and they're just like the bull in the china shop. They're bouncing off the walls because of that. So these folks are very prone to anxiety and panic attacks. A second pattern is the people who are slow metabolizers with low energy. Now, this might seem strange. You might say, well, why would they be anxious? They're just kind of dragging around. And that's true. They often are tired. They may not say they're tired, but when you get the hair analysis back and they're a very slow oxidizer, like the secretary's mother in the case history, these folks are tired. Now, why does this produce anxiety? Because we need energy to cope. We need energy to function. And we know this inside. And when you have very slow oxidation and very low energy, it's scary to have to operate in the world. One knows one has to go places, one has to do things, and the energy simply isn't there. An analogy for this type would be if you had a car that would only go 10 miles an hour, but you had to drive on the freeway. You can imagine that it would be scary. You know, there'd be people passing you, whizzing by. You know you can't maneuver very well. And this is how a lot of people feel inside. And the more we can understand how people feel inside with their anxiety and panic attacks, the more we can help them. So this is the case with low energy. Now, actually, when someone is a very fast oxidizer, their energy efficiency also goes down. The body has what we might call a torque curve or an energy efficiency curve, just like a car engine. And when it's going too fast or too slow, it actually decreases efficiency. The only difference is that with the fast one, the engine is running very fast, so you don't feel necessarily the tiredness, although some people do, actually. But with the slow one, things are just very sluggish, and they know that they're tired and exhausted, and it can be very anxiety-producing. And this is a cause of panic attacks. Now, there's a third pattern that is associated with the slow oxidizer type, and that's elevated copper. And copper specifically enhances all the emotions, but it's highly associated with panic attacks, anxiety, phobias, fears, extremely connected with this. If you question people with high copper, of which there are a lot, probably 50% or more of the hair analysis that you will see, and you ask them about fears and phobias, they will often admit, yes, I do. I do have fears, and anxiety is often a part of this. Copper has a peculiar effect. It speeds up brain function. So these folks may not be in touch with their fatigue because they may be sort of wound up, hyped up, even have trouble sleeping, which of course is part of anxiety often. However, and they often will tell you, my mind races. I ask people, does your mind race? And they say, yes, usually the copper, a lot of the copper people. Anyway, however, they are also tired. And of course, just being wound up can make them anxious. So the copper folks, copper has a stimulatory effect on the biogenic amines, which are neurotransmitters, and even on thyroid function, it can sort of stimulate. And some of your hyperthyroid cases, they come back slow oxidizers with high copper or copper imbalance. Some can be hidden copper imbalance. Copper can show up as high on hair analysis, but often it does not show up as high, and yet there are hidden copper indicators, we call it. And these indicators are a high calcium level, a low potassium level, a low sodium-potassium ratio, a copper level less than 1, mercury toxicity, and often things like a low zinc level. So a copper imbalance is a big one when it comes to anxiety and panic attacks, because copper enhances emotional responses. Copper actually stimulates the emotional brain, the diencephalon, whereas zinc stimulates or supports the cortex, the new brain, which lays over the old brain and which suppresses emotion or transmutes emotion. But copper is associated with the emotional brain and all the emotions. So copper imbalance is a very important cause of anxiety and panic attacks. As the copper levels come down, often the anxiety decreases. Okay. Another hair analysis indicator is associated with low energy, because there are a number on the hair test, and this one is a low ratio of sodium to potassium. This we call a sodium-potassium inversion. A low ratio of sodium to potassium is associated with adrenal gland exhaustion, which means translates into fatigue, and it's associated with copper imbalance. And so we've got two things there which are associated with anxiety and panic attacks. So any time that the sodium and potassium levels are low, any time that the ratio of sodium to potassium is low, it should be 2.5 to 1, anything less than that, especially if it's less than, say, 2 to 1, these are associated with inversion, with anxiety due to low energy and due to a hidden or an overt copper imbalance. Okay, another pattern on the hair test that's highly associated with anxiety at times is hypoglycemic indicators. Now, one of those hypoglycemic indicators is a low sodium to potassium ratio. Another of them is an imbalanced calcium to magnesium ratio. And why would this be? Well, you see, hypoglycemia causes ups and downs in blood sugar. It's associated with ups and downs in blood sugar. And when the blood sugar drops, it's extremely panicky. It feels extremely panicky. If you read in textbooks, symptoms associated with hypoglycemia include confusion, panic, even psychosis, blacking out, fainting, and the brain starts to starve is actually what happens. And this pattern is very important as far as anxiety and panic attacks. It happens in both fast oxidizers and slow oxidizers. It can be extreme and come on at an instant moment's notice, or it can be sort of chronic and happen during the day, you know, say an hour and a half after meals, 2 hours after meals, especially depends on what you eat. So hypoglycemia can often be read on a hair analysis. Now, what's interesting is that the glucose tolerance tests, even the 5-hour glucose tolerance tests, often do not detect hypoglycemia unless you do insulin levels along with glucose levels. The reason for this is you can have enough glucose in your blood, but it may not be reaching the tissues. And therefore, you can have a cellular hypoglycemia. It wouldn't be called glycemia because that means in the blood, low sugar in the blood. But it's a cellular low blood sugar, even if the cellular low sugar, even if the blood sugar is okay. And if you stay in practice enough, you'll talk to people who said, I just had my 5-hour glucose tolerance test, and I actually fell off the chair and fainted, or felt like I was going to do that, but they told me my blood sugar is normal. Yeah, so you know there's a problem with that test. The other thing is how they read them, how they interpret the tests. And they're usually interpreted too sort of liberally, too widely. But the blood test is not always conclusive. But the hair analysis, the ratio of calcium to magnesium, the sodium-potassium ratio, and also deficiencies of minerals such as manganese, zinc, and chromium are often indicative of low blood sugar, and symptoms are very helpful. You can simply ask a person, do you crave sweets? Do you have trouble, irritability before meals? Do you have trouble skipping meals? Do you have reactions to sugar when you eat sweets and sugars and carbohydrates? These are often the simple questions you can ask, and you will find out if hypoglycemia is a factor here. So it is a factor in anxiety and in panic attacks in many cases. One case history I remember was a therapist who came to me complaining of extreme anxiety. We cut his hair for the hair analysis, but I asked him what he ate, and he said, oh, you know, donuts and coffee and fast food. And I said to him, you know, that could be the reason for your anxiety. Do me a favor and try an experiment. In the next week while we're waiting for your hair analysis, would you stop the coffee, you know, use coffee substitutes, and cut out the sugar? And he came back a week later and said, my gosh, I am so much better. So sometimes it's simply a diet, and we're going to talk about stimulants and things later on in the tape here. Okay, another topic with hair analysis is other toxic metals other than copper, because copper is not the only toxic metal that can affect brain function. As a matter of fact, all the toxic metals are neurotoxic. This, for example, cadmium. Cadmium replaces zinc and calcium in enzyme binding sites. Well, calcium, magnesium, and zinc are what we call the sedative elements. And whenever someone has anxiety and panic attacks, those nutrients, those minerals, can be used liberally because they will help calm a person down. And so anything that interferes with those elements, such as cadmium, is liable to cause anxiety and panic attacks in some people. The Navy did a study of their recruits, and they found the most behavior problems were those with high cadmium in their hair analysis. Now, it's important to notice that hair analysis does not reveal all the toxic metals that are in the body. As a matter of fact, there's no way to find out all the toxic metals that are in a body that I know of. People use the challenge tests, urine challenge tests with EDTA, for example, but even that is not going to pick up all the toxic metals because they can be stored deep inside your tissues, and it's hard to find them, hard to see them. The hair analysis only measures what's in the hair, and so if they're stored away, we won't see them in the hair necessarily. However, the way we do it is we put a person on a program designed to balance their chemistry and to help remove toxic metals, and then on a retest, or it may take several retests, over a period of months or even several years, the toxic metals begin to show up because they are eliminated through the hair tissue as well as through the bile and the kidneys and so forth. So toxic metals are actually a factor in most people because most people today have some toxic metals. Often they're born with them, or they can result from dietary problems. Cadmium comes from tap water, junk food, cigarette smoke, or they're due to mercury due to dental fillings or exposure to mercury in the water supplies, foods, shellfish, you know, anything caught near the shores which are polluted, and so forth. pesticides. Mercury is used as a pesticide. Arsenic is used in pesticides. And so most people have some toxic metals. If they don't show up in the hair test, I tell people, you know, they don't show up, but that doesn't mean you don't have them. And we will actually put you on a program to help remove them because, in my experience, they are a factor. They may not be the biggest factor, but they're a factor in most everyone's health today. So cadmium, mercury is another one that is definitely can be associated with anxiety and panic attacks. The Mad Hatters of Alice in Wonderland were mercury toxic, and the mercury affects the thyroid gland, the mercury affects the brain, and causes emotional changes. And I know several people who told me they were exposed to mercury and their personality changed, and they became rather upset and uptight and all this. So toxic metals are a factor, and I would say they're always somewhat of a factor to consider. Finally, nutrient deficiencies are often a cause of anxiety and panic attacks or a contributor. And we've already talked about some of the nutrients that are important. I mentioned calcium, magnesium, and zinc as being what we call the sedative minerals. Zinc is actually considered a calming neurotransmitter in its own right. Magnesium is often given to people who have just had a heart attack. Magnesium has a very powerful calming and relaxing effect on the nervous system, as well as the muscular system. And calcium is very important for nerve conduction and nerve relaxation. So it's important. In addition, there are a lot of other nutrients that have a calming effect, and people can be deficient in them. For example, L-taurine is an amino acid. It's only found in meat. And so if someone's a vegetarian, they're not going to get it. There's these nutrients like GABA, which is a neurotransmitter. L-tryptophan, which is found in turkey and milk products, has a calming and relaxing effect. It's also sold today as 5-HTP. And of course, you can use these as symptomatic remedies for anxiety, along with herbs like valerian and skullcap and passion flower and hops. These, kava, these can be used as symptomatic remedies. However, I have found, and you will probably find, that if you just do symptomatic remedies, you don't get as good results. The problem tends to come back, and the person becomes, quote, addicted. It's no different than being addicted to tranquilizers. Now they're addicted to some supplement, and it doesn't really work that well because you're not undoing the cause. We would much prefer you do a better service to your patient if you can go for causes. So that's what this tape is about mainly. However, it's good to know about these symptomatic remedies because in a pinch, they're great. You know, they can be helpful. You can take a bunch of 5-HTP and it may help you to sleep. Another product that I use for anti-anxiety is a product by Endomet Labs called ICMN. This stands for inositol, choline, methionine, and niacinamide. Inositol, choline, methionine, and niacinamide are methyl donors, and they have a peculiar action on the adrenal hormones, and they shift the adrenal hormones and can reduce anxiety. They work very well in fast oxidizers in particular, who often need extra inositol and choline. Now, you may also know that choline is the precursor for acetylcholine, and acetylcholine is one of the calming neurotransmitters. So that's another reason this works. Also, ICMN works on the liver. The methyl donors are helpful for the liver, and they help detoxify the liver, especially copper. Copper builds up in the liver. And so ICMN helps remove copper, helps promote the production of choline, and has this interesting effect on adrenal hormones that sometimes are associated with anxiety and panic attacks. Your adrenal hormones are things like adrenaline, and if you've ever had an adrenaline rush, like if you just about ran over somebody's dog or, heaven forbid, a person, often you'll have this adrenaline rush, and you shake all over, and it feels like an anxiety attack. That's how adrenaline affects your body. And fortunately, we don't have those too often, most of us. But anything that can help with that is good. And the ICMN, fast oxidizers can live in a kind of adrenaline rush a lot of the time. So that's another calming product that I use. Calcium, magnesium, zinc. Copper is very good for fast oxidizers. Very, very essential. Fast oxidizers will not get well without some copper, which is needed to bring up their calcium level. That's the connection. Copper helps bring up the calcium level. And the calcium level brings up the magnesium level often, especially if you give both elements. And then ICMN, and then some of the amino acids like taurine and tryptophan, and then the herbs. And those are some of the sort of anti-anxiety nutrients. There are also other remedies. There are homeopathic remedies. Some people like what's called rescue remedy, which is a Bach flower remedy. And then there are some homeopathics. There's one called Calms, I know. And for some people, these things are effective as symptomatic. The other place that symptomatic remedies are used, that we use them, is that when a person's on a total program, which is the best way to do things, sometimes they will go through what we call a healing crisis or a healing reaction. And I've gone through many of these myself. As I mentioned, I've had anxiety. My anxiety was due to high copper and slow oxidation. And often as the copper is coming out, it gets dumped from the tissues into the blood, and before it can get out of the blood, it circulates in the blood, and it can cause extreme anxiety. Matter of fact, I had some the other day. And fortunately, rather than panic, I often can recognize, I've gone through it enough times that I say, oh, this is a healing reaction, and if I just take more of the remedies for the anxiety, this will pass. And it does, because I'm not getting sick. You know, I look around and I say, is there a reason why I should feel so anxious? And usually there is not. There might be some things going on, but it's not enough. And so that's another place where taking the remedies, the symptomatic remedies, are helpful. So I might go and I take extra calcium, magnesium, zinc. For myself, if you know that you have high copper, I take something called molybdenum. Moly-Q is the product name. And I know that that also lowers my copper very quickly. And that helps me get through the crisis. And if you're working with patients, this is important to know, that they will go through these healing reactions at times, and that all you have to do, sometimes we slow down their nutrition program, especially if it's a very intense one, because once they're in the healing reaction, they don't need the program to like move through it. They can rest off the supplements for a day or two. And you can get the symptomatic remedies like calcium, magnesium, zinc, molybdenum for copper, ICMN, taurine, 5-HTP, to get them through just to help ease the symptoms until it passes. And actually, we could do a whole tape on how to use those. For example, molybdenum is very good. Moly-Q is very good for copper because it actually gets rid of the copper. It doesn't just suppress the symptom, where like 5-HTP might sort of suppress it, but it actually gets rid of the copper. So if you know what's going on from a hair analysis, you can tailor the little remedies properly and do the one that's going to work the best. Okay, now those are some of the most important things that we see on hair analysis. There is one other, and that has to do with bowel problems and digestive problems. And when you're not digesting your food, you produce poisons in your intestines. And those poisons are quite toxic, and they are toxic to the brain, and they can cause many symptoms, including anxiety and panic symptoms. And for example, a big one these days is the presence of candida albicans in the intestines. This is the incorrect flora. You're supposed to have acidophilus in there. But instead, because you've taken antibiotics or steroids that kills off the acidophilus, or due to other problems, you have candida albicans growing in there instead. For example, if you have copper toxicity, the copper will kill candida, but when it's out of balance, it's often bio-unavailable, the candida grows. If you have a very alkaline colon, you can favor candida, just like an alkaline vagina will favor candida. It's supposed to be acid, slightly acid, medium. So there are different reasons why you can have these bowel problems. A lot of people may have parasitic infections that are throwing off the flora, or even other intestinal infections. Now, this is sometimes visible on a hair analysis. And the way it's visible on hair analysis would be a low phosphorus level. A low phosphorus level. Why? Because phosphorus reflects protein synthesis. And protein synthesis requires protein digestion. Of course, requires proper ingestion of protein, dietary protein. Digestion of the protein, absorption of the protein, and then synthesis. And when there's a low phosphorus, one of those functions is not working right. Something's wrong there. It can be the diet, digestion, or synthesis, which has to do with zinc and other nutrients. So it's not a perfect indicator by any means. But if you see a low phosphorus, digestion should be addressed. And actually, digestion and bowel habits and bowel condition, I think, should be addressed in everyone and addressed early. In other words, it can be one of the first things. The way I do it primarily is through symptoms. I ask people, do you have gas? Do you have bloating? Do you have indigestion? Do you have stomach pain? Do you have discomfort when you eat or after you eat? What are your bowel habits like? Do you have diarrhea? And a lot of people will say yes. And of course, you have to find out that they're meaning the same thing you do, because some people say, oh, I'm not constipated. And you say, well, how often do you go to the bathroom? Oh, once every 2-3 days. And they've done that their whole life, and that they consider normal. That's not normal. It should be once or twice a day. Animals usually go after every meal, but at least once or twice a day would be much better. And, you know, even if the bowel movements smell horrible, something's wrong. Because that odor is toxic material that's being produced. If you don't digest your food, the proteins putrefy, which means rot, and the starches and sugars ferment. And not only does that cause gas and bloating in many people, but it also causes odors, especially putrefaction or rotting. So bowel problems can be certainly contribute to everything, because you're producing poisons in there. Candida albicans, for example, produces alcohol, and it produces acetaldehyde, both of which are neurotoxins. And can contribute to anxiety and panic attacks, because they're interfering with proper brain function and also metabolic function. Okay, so those are all things that we assess. The hair analysis is so helpful. It's sort of like a quick thing to give you lots of information. Now, there are actually a couple of other patterns that are important. One of them is called four highs. Four high electrolytes. The first four numbers on the test are high: calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium. These people are often anxious. I don't know that they have panic attacks always, but they're often anxious. And the reason is that, let me use an analogy. Four high electrolytes, actually it looks like this on the hair analysis. It's like these people are on stilts. And if you imagine yourself walking around on stilts, it's kind of anxiety producing. You're not very steady. And that's exactly what is the case with these people's chemistry. And for that, I could give you a very recent case history. It's about a psychotherapist friend of mine who got interested in hair analysis recently. And she didn't even mention anxiety, because she said to me, oh, I'm fine. There's no problems. Well, we got her hair analysis back, and she came back with four highs. And first she was shocked. She said, I don't understand this. I'm fine. Everything's okay. But anyway, I said to her, do you ever get tired? Because she was actually a slow oxidizer. She says, oh yeah, I do. And I said, how much do you sleep? And she said, oh, 5 hours. I said, why just five? She says, because sleep is a waste of time. I said, oh, it is, really. Anyway, that's another topic which we're going to talk about, meaning lifestyle and sleep. Anyway, I said to her, please do me a favor. Take some supplements. Her diet was pretty good. We didn't have to change her diet. And I said, I want you to sleep 7 hours at least, and eight preferably. Because four high people are what is called a secondary stress reaction. They are under a lot of stress. And the reason could be many things. It could be, you know, it could be physical stress, it could be emotional stress, it could be financial stress. In this case, it was sleep stress or sleep deprivation stress, and also probably some nutrient deficiencies. Anyway, this woman did what I said, and I don't think it was 2 weeks later that I called her, and I said, "How are you doing?" And she says, "Well," she says, "I'm much more relaxed." Oh, in other words, she was quite anxious. She just thought that that was normal. But actually, and I told her, I said, "And what else?" She says, "Well, I am a little tired." Well, that's because when you come out of four highs, the first thing that happens to you is you drop down into slow oxidation. Four highs is actually what we call a slow oxidizer under stress. You have the four highs, the calcium magnesium is high, which is a slow oxidation pattern, and then the sodium potassium levels are high because it's a secondary alarm reaction, a secondary stress reaction. And the first thing that happens to these people when they get put on a program, diet, lifestyle, supplements, is that the secondary reaction goes away and you're left with slow metabolism. But she was definitely anxious, and she now calmed down when she got out of the four highs. So four high electrolytes on a hair analysis is an anxiety panic attack pattern. And there's one other pattern, and that's four low electrolytes. And this one is often obvious. Four low electrolytes is a burnout and exhaustion pattern. And often the person is anxious, and often visibly so. Not always, but often they are. I would use the word compulsive to describe some of the four lows people. It's a personality pattern, but it can have biochemical causes. Sometimes the personality is causing the biochemistry, sometimes the chemistry is causing or contributing to the personality issue or the emotional pattern. The best analogy for four lows is a car stuck in the mud or the ice, spinning its wheels. Uses up a lot of energy, makes a lot of noise, you know, screeching, can't get out of it, stuck, and can be extremely anxiety producing. And many four lows people complain of anxiety. Four lows is not an easy pattern to get out of. It's a chronic pattern. Often the personality of the person is the fast oxidizer. In other words, underneath it all, regardless of what the hair analysis shows, because within four lows and within four highs also, one can be a slow oxidizer, meaning the calcium magnesium levels can be higher than the sodium potassium relatively, or one can be a fast oxidizer. That means the calcium magnesium levels, relatively speaking, are lower than the sodium and potassium on the graphs. So regardless of what the graphs show, whether it shows a slow oxidizer or a fast oxidizer, emotionally speaking, the four lows people are generally fast oxidizing types, or what we call sympathetic dominant types. And what that means is that they tend to like a lot of activity. They tend to be sort of compulsive types. They tend to often be sensitive types, meaning reacting to their environment. Often there's a kind of holding in or I don't really want to use the word suppression, but there it comes out in activity and a need for activity. Sometimes I think it's because four lows people often do not like to slow down. They somehow that's threatening. For example, it might bring up an emotional issue or something. They have trouble just being at peace, we might say, and a great need, of course, to be at peace and to be quiet and relax and to have everything okay, but they often will create problems if the problems don't exist. So that's sort of a picture of them, and so they're very prone to anxiety and disorders, panic disorders, that sort of symptom. And again, it could be primary or it could be secondary to the nutritional imbalance. Because after all, four lows means the calcium and magnesium are low. And whenever calcium and magnesium are low, those are your sedative elements. You know, and often the zinc is low too, but the calcium and magnesium are definitely low. And so these people are hyper-reactive. You know, another way to look at calcium and magnesium is that they are stress buffer elements. They buffer stress. Calcium is a hard element, and it's almost like a protective element, like a wall. And so when you have a hair analysis with a low calcium magnesium, which is your four lows and the fast oxidation pattern, the true fast, you're looking at a lack of the stress buffers. And therefore, people react quickly and easily. They overreact. They can be irritable, hyper-reactive. So that may be a helpful way to look at it. That's how I think of fast oxidizers. And that is associated with anxiety. And if there's some kind of stress, like driving on a freeway or whatever it is for a person, then they can go into a panic attack. Okay, I think that concludes what I wanted to talk about in terms of strictly the hair analysis patterns, but you can see this quite a bit. We've gone over fast oxidation, slow oxidation, and low energy, copper imbalance, low energy in other patterns like the sodium-potassium inversion, four high numbers, four low numbers, four low electrolytes, hypoglycemic patterns, other toxic metal patterns, and then nutrient deficiency patterns and bowel problems causing candida and other poisons to be released into the body. Okay, let's talk about a few other nutritional topics, and then we'll go on to lifestyle. In some people, food allergies, although we don't think of food allergies causing anxiety and panic attacks, they can. Dr. Abram Hoffer, who's an orthomolecular psychiatrist, has written about this. He talks about a case, I remember, of a little girl. Every time she ate oysters, she actually started in with bizarre behavior and actually became sort of psychotic. So, in fact, food allergies can affect the brain and brain chemistry. They can do so, by the way, by many mechanisms. The food can have a nutrient in it that you don't need, like copper, say, if your copper is already high and you eat something high in copper. The food can have something which depresses another nutrient. For example, the copper in a food might depress zinc, or you know, something else in the food might depress another nutrient that's very needed in the body. Or it can be some sort of a food that causes a histamine reaction, and histamine release in the brain, these are called brain allergies, and they've been written about, can cause anxiety and panic attack kind of reactions. So there are different ways that foods can operate. Food, you can do food allergy testing. The simplest way to detect food allergies, well, often people know it. They say to you, you know, and whenever I eat, you know, donuts or something, sugar, whatever it is, eggs or whatever, I feel really panicky. And so, of course, it's important to listen to that. It's amazing how many doctors do not listen to that. People go to their doctor and they tell them whenever they drink milk or whenever they eat soy products or something, they feel bad, and the doctor just blows it off. No, food allergies are real. You can go on an elimination diet. This is often the simplest and the most reliable way. You put the person on a diet of, say, turkey and rice and a few vegetables, things that don't cause reactions in most people, and then you slowly add one food at a time, especially the suspect foods. If you suspect, you know, dairy products, then you say, well, cut out all the dairy for a week and then add it back and see what happens. Because the food allergy tests are okay, and they can give a lot of insight, but they're not 100% accurate. What tends to happen is any food that you eat a lot of will tend to show up with some degree of allergy on a test. And that's because your body makes some antibodies to it, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the real problem, but it is a clue. So that's another topic, a food topic to be considered. And it's one to ask people. If they're having anxiety or panic or any problem, you say, have you noticed that it's worse after certain foods or meals? Okay, another topic for panic attacks and anxiety is the use of stimulants and toxic substances of all kinds. This is actually a pretty obvious one, but I mentioned the case earlier of the therapist who was drinking a lot of coffee, for example. Well, coffee is pretty stimulating stuff. Coffee or yerba mate, you know, or some of these drinks that have ginseng and ephedra in them, or other caffeine-containing things like soda pop, or even over-the-counter medications that have caffeine in them. Some of your cold remedies have caffeine in them. this is an obvious thing, and yet it's amazing, but people overlook it. They don't associate the use of stimulants with tendency for anxiety and panic feelings. So it's always good to ask about those things. Alcohol, I suppose, could be considered in that class. In other words, some people, the alcohol actually works more on blood sugar. And of course, sugar, I consider one of those stimulants. Because when you eat sugar, and that includes honey and maple syrup and rice bran syrup, anything sweet, even fruit juice, you raise the blood sugar up, and it's very stimulating in the sense of the blood sugar, and then there's a rebound effect where the blood sugar drops. And in that reaction, which, by the way, the caffeine has the same similar reaction. It does it through the adrenals. The caffeine stimulates the adrenals, which raises blood sugar, and then it drops. And so all these stimulants affect brain chemistry and can be a potent cause of anxiety feelings. Also, there are prescribed medications that can do this, things like theophylline, used for asthma, and there are other medications that tend to create anxiety. And if a person has this symptom and they're on medications, it's always worth reviewing what they're taking and could this be due to a medication. Okay, another topic that's very important, very obvious in some cases, sometimes not so obvious, is lifestyle. I mentioned the case history of the therapist who wasn't getting enough sleep. This may seem obvious, but to a lot of people it's not obvious. The woman I was referring to is a very intelligent lady, but she didn't make the connection. And a lot of people don't make the connection between sleep and your mental state. There has been recent research reported on the importance of sleep, and I think it's becoming more widespread because so many people are sleep deprived. They may be sleep deprived because they have trouble sleeping, insomnia, or they simply don't allow themselves the time to sleep. Some of the lifestyles are pretty insane, where people are up at 5 to get their kids off to school and go to work, and then they want to stay up and watch the news or the late show. I know in some areas they're starting school later because the children, the teenagers, really need their sleep. And when they're not getting their sleep, anxiety and panic feelings are common. It's really a low-energy cause. The panic and anxiety is secondary to fatigue and exhaustion. Exercise is very helpful for panic and anxiety. I've used this one myself since I've dealt with anxiety. Sleep, of course, is something I'm real big on. Naps, too, by the way. Often a great cure for feelings of anxiety if it's due to exhaustion. But exercise is another one. And, you know, different body types and different people need different exercise regimens. When I say exercise, just mean aerobics or jogging. Actually, gentle exercise, walking, especially outdoors in a beautiful setting, very helpful. You know, I don't suggest walking near a freeway or a very noisy area. That's not going to be too relaxing. But exercise is good. The vigorous exercise is okay if a person has the energy for it, but many people do not. And therefore, the vigorous exercise will make them feel better for a while, and then it'll make them feel more depressed. It'll make them feel worse because what it does is they're exhausted to begin with. The anxiety is secondary to the depression. And they exercise, and it literally is a stimulant, no different than drinking more coffee or sugar. And they feel better for a little while, but then the blood sugar starts to drop because the adrenals start to drop, and the whole body becomes more exhausted, and the problem comes back as strong or worse than before. So actually, gentle to moderate exercise, especially for a longer period of time, like an hour, is often better. I find I'm helped by even 15 minutes. Certainly a half hour is better, but even a short period of exercise is excellent. One of the reasons exercise is so good is because you do deep breathing. Breathing is a unique function because it is voluntary, but it's also automatic. And if you'll read any of the yoga texts, they tell you that this means that by controlling your breathing, you can control your nervous system. It's one of the few ways that you can directly tune into your autonomic nervous system is through breathing. And there's been research about people who are having anxiety attacks, panic attacks, asthma attacks, which are often closely tied to panic and anxiety. And if they can stop whatever they're thinking and feeling and just breathe slowly and deeply, they can abort the attack. So gentle exercise, I would add to that, or vigorous exercise, breathing, conscious breathing. And if you can't exercise or you don't have time, just to lie down where you are or sit down and breathe consciously, the yoga breath, the three-part breath. It's often good to count, you know, for example, count to 10 breathing in, count to 10 breathing out. What I find, I tend to be anxious, I tend to breathe shallow. When I start doing that, I often can only count to 3. And that's it. I'm all, you know, I have all the breath and then 3 and it's gone. But if I will do that for 5 or 10 minutes, the whole body relaxes and all of a sudden I can count to 5, to 6, to 8, to 10. And the breath becomes long and slow and deep. And with it, the central nervous system calms down, the autonomic nervous system. As long as we're on that topic, by the way, maybe I should bring in that connection. The fast oxidizer is often in what we call sympathetic dominance. Sympathetic nervous system is the fight or flight nervous system, and it is associated with anxiety and panic as a general. It's part of fight or flight. It can be the cause of sympathetic dominance, but the sympathetic nervous system kind of gears you up. The calcium magnesium levels go down. The adrenals activity increases. The opposite system is the parasympathetic. It's associated with nurturing, nourishing, relaxation, rest, digestion. It turns off the brain and the muscles, turns on the digestive organs. So deep breathing, along with, you know, exercise, moving the body, stretching, relaxing, and we're going to talk about other therapies like meditation, relaxation, things like this, they tend to help turn off the sympathetic nervous system. Anything that turns off your sympathetic nervous system is going to be good for anxiety and panic attacks. So that's where breathing and light exercise and sleep and rest helps. Another thing that helps in terms of lifestyle is a regular lifestyle. In other words, regular meals, regular hours, not staying up till all hours and then having to rush around or, you know, doing everything last minute. And in other words, to get more organized and more a little more disciplined and regular habits and regular schedules. That's also just takes stress off you, that's all. Now, you can become compulsive with this and overdo it and then make yourself worse. So I don't mean to be compulsive, but to set up regular hours and regular habits does take a lot of stress and strain. For hypoglycemia, for example, hypoglycemic people absolutely need regular meals. They need to eat on a schedule, and they often need to eat a snack on a schedule, at least until their body chemistry improves and the symptom improves. But until that time, the only way to control the blood sugar is often to have regular meals and maybe regular snacks in between meals. Another factor that is very nice is light, believe it or not. They've done studies on children where they were kept indoors in school under fluorescent lights, and they became irritable and anxious. When they put the children in full spectrum light, or outdoors in full spectrum light, or the indoor full spectrum lights, the children calm down. And so there's a lot of people who live in offices all day long under fluorescent lights with no natural light or very little. They're not getting a full spectrum. Fluorescent lights, the old ones certainly used to flicker, actually. And then they become anxious. So light therapy is important, along with sleep and exercise and breathing, regular habits, and also under lifestyle, stress reduction in every way. In other words, peace and quiet, not living or working in a noisy environment, having pleasant surroundings, having nice people in your life. If you have people who are crazy or driving you nuts, a good idea is to gracefully let them go, because why increase your stress level It's not really helping them, and it's not really helping you. So the companions you keep, the environment you live in, is certainly a factor in people with anxiety and panic attacks. I'll give you an example. I used to live in Phoenix, Arizona, and when I moved there, it was a large, small town. There was only one freeway in the whole city, and things moved pretty slowly. It was, you know, it was kind of a lazy place in the sun. Well, over the years, more and more people moved there. The city grew. The kind of people who moved there were East Coast and Midwestern, you know, Chicago people, much faster-paced people. They started building freeways all over the place, and the pace of life literally increased, you know, from 35 miles an hour to 70 miles an hour. At the area that I lived in had been a peaceful little quiet neighborhood, and then they put in two freeways, and not only was there continuous noise from the freeways, but the whole place changed character and quality. And I found that after a while, I got there in 1980, by 1990, and certainly by 1992 or 3, every time I went back home from my office into my little neighborhood, which I used to love, I would feel anxiety. I would literally start having like mini panic attacks going home. And of course, finally, I figured out I had to move because the environment is very important. And much as I liked the neighborhood where I was living and the people there, it wasn't working for me anymore. By the way, on my hair test, when I moved to Phoenix, I had a high copper. I got on my nutrition program. It came down and normalized. But 10 years later, when the freeways were built and the pace of life increased, my copper started to go up again. Elevated copper can be a defense mechanism against stress because it detaches you from stress. My copper went up. My anxiety went up. I couldn't bring the copper down. It didn't matter what supplements. I took the Molly Q. I took what's called Nigris S, which is sulfur, Russian black radish, which helps lower copper. I took vitamin B6. I took all the things. I did everything I knew, meditation, natural therapies. Couldn't bring that copper down. As soon as I moved out of Phoenix and into a quiet environment up in the mountains, the copper level came down. And of course, with it, took about 6 months, the anxiety feelings dissipated. So lifestyle, environment, the company you keep, these things are very important. Okay, another topic is mental, emotional, spiritual kind of outlook. It's not strictly nutrition again, but it goes along with it, so we'll throw it in. It's been very important for me. People's attitude makes a huge difference. It should be obvious, but many people thrive on stress. They're what you call stress seekers. And that can be because they don't want to look at other things. You know, if they had no stress, they would have to face themselves. Or they're just used to it. They're comfortable with it, no matter how crazy it is. So they create problems. They can create financial problems. They can create relationship dramas and so forth. So it's good to look at that and see if someone is a stress seeker. And if that's the case, I know I had to go through this. I was always on the go. I was always active. And my body burned out. I couldn't be active. It was very hard to just be quiet, sit still, lie around. I felt terribly guilty. I felt terribly lazy. And I had to deal with those issues and those feelings. And that's generally what will come up, among other things. You know, you may not like yourself. You may find things about your life that you don't like. But also, there's generally this guilt thing and laziness. You're not productive. What's wrong with me? I'm burned out. I'm over the hill. All that. So getting in touch with feelings and letting go of things that drive you, that cause stress and cause you to just be active, are very helpful. Another one is to live in the present moment. And this is a this is a pretty advanced spiritual idea, but it really works. The idea is that any time that you find yourself either in guilt or remorse, regret, you're living in the past. You're not in the present. You're living in the past. Guilt, remorse, regret. Any time that you find yourself feeling anxiety, fearfulness or anxiety, you're in the future. Most people live in the past or the future all the time. The problem with this, not only is that it's not a very pleasant place usually to live, but also they're missing the present. And when you miss the present, you miss a lot of the beauty of life, and you can't relax because relaxation is generally in the present. And also they put stress on themselves because you make poor decisions. When you're not in the present, you're not seeing all the things around you that are happening. And therefore you say yes when you should say no. You say no when you ought to say yes. You go here when you ought to go there because you're not seeing things very clearly. Many people with poor memory, it's because they're not in the present. They're not listening, in a word. And I found for myself, my memory improved dramatically, my thinking improved dramatically, when I made a conscious effort to stay present. And as I say, one way to do that is just to notice, oh, I'm in anxiety or fear, that means I'm in the future. Oops, pull me back to the present. Or I'm in regret or guilt. Oops, I'm in the past. Another way is through meditation techniques. Meditation, when you focus on something like your breathing or an object or your hand or part of your body, it tends to keep you in the present. And that's part of the reason people do meditation. So that's an important one. Another thing I like to, there you can use affirmations to help you stay in the present. The one that I like on this topic is, I am in the right place at the right time. I am in the right place at the right time. And I'll say this often when I get anxious. You know, I'll start to get anxious and I'll just say, I'm in the right time at the right place at the right time. And if I listen to that and believe it, the anxiety will often diminish and go away. Because the anxiety is about, oh, I should be here, I should be doing this, I should have done that. If you see what I mean, that's the problem. And that is anxiety producing. So I am in the right place at the right time. Another one, which is gets us into more metaphysical stuff, is I need do nothing. You see, we really don't do things out of need. We think we do, but we do them out of choice. We do things out of choice. And when you feel you have choice, you have maneuverability, you have maneuvering room, you have room to make other choices. And so I need do nothing means, no, I'm doing this out of choice. And if you're in a crazy situation, you say, I need do nothing. Oh, you mean I'm choosing this. Another one is to say, I can choose peace instead of this. In other words, I can choose again. And if you're in an anxiety state, you say, I can choose peace instead of this. Oh, it's a reminder that you have some choices. You're not compelled to act in a certain way or feel a certain thing. Things like A Course in Miracles, some of your Buddhist philosophy, you know, these things are helpful because they teach some of these basic things about staying in the present and learning who we are and why we're here and all that sort of thing. When I was very anxious years ago, I used to say the 23rd Psalm because some of the religious things are very helpful. And this is why they find that people who attend church or some kind of religious organization actually have less problems with anxiety and panic attacks and many depression and many things. Because it may be the camaraderie and it may be the support, and it can also be because of the teachings. So the 23rd Psalm, part of which says, though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. And it goes on to say, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I used to say that one sometimes 100 times a day. And the way affirmations work is that it's not about brainwashing you, but it is about putting new thoughts in your head. And then one day, I remember, after doing that for a few months, one day it all made sense. It actually had meaning. It wasn't just words, if you see what I mean. But you start out with the words. You start out with a decision that, yes, I'm going to follow the principles that are in the 23rd Psalm or the Lord's Prayer. You know, that's another good one. And after a while, it begins to have an effect on your mind and it can shift your thinking. So mental, emotional exercises, which would include meditation exercises, relaxation exercises, affirmations of the type that I'm saying, the type like, I am feeling better and better and everybody loves me and I love everybody, that to me is not quite as good because it's not necessarily based on spiritual principles. But the 23rd Psalm, the Lord's Prayer, I am in the right place at the right time. I can choose peace instead of this. These things are. These are based on deeper principles, which we don't really have space to go into on this tape. and they do work. But they start with a decision, and you just stay with it. Write it on your wallpaper, whatever it takes to remind you. And they begin to shift your mind. Along with this, I would recommend for anyone with these disorders to have books around the house that are uplifting, enlightening, inspiring along these lines. In other words, everything in your life should support your new thought, behavior, emotional patterns. I used to get great solace from reading certain authors. There was a yoga book that a fellow, an older book that I really enjoyed. There was a book by Jay Krishnamurti that I used to enjoy. C.S. Lewis, the Christian writer, has some very wonderful things to say. And there's a book called The Great Divorce. There's a number of books out there. There's a book called Love Without End, which is channelings from Jesus, supposedly, whatever. There are a number of them, Course in Miracles. There are a number of books. Whatever is helpful for you, use it. Okay, and the final topic I want to go over is the use of other therapies. First of all, medication certainly can have a place. I would look at it as a stopgap measure, although some medications do balance your body chemistry, and that's why they work, is they balance body chemistry. And they have a place because sometimes anxiety or panic attacks are so overwhelming that there's definitely a need for this. The goal would be to reduce medication by substituting natural methods that have fewer side effects. That's the problem with the medications. Also, often there are issues to be faced, and the medication sort of delays the inevitable, and the issues remain festering underneath. But medication has a place. We never take people off medication, all at once. At least I never would do that and would never recommend it because, first of all, you could be responsible for the consequences. And secondly, it's just not a wise way to do it. It's better to do the mineral test and other things and slowly improve the body chemistry and then reduce the medication as needed, as you're able to. By the way, I didn't talk about a very general chemical principle, which is that when your body is unhealthy, you get unhealthy messages to your brain. And the message can be, life is not good, life is full of anxiety and panic and depression. And as the body gets healthier, you start to get positive messages from the body saying, hey, life is good, life is not anxious, life is calm and relaxed. And that's not about a specific mineral pattern. That's about general health. And I don't want to underestimate that because I've noticed that in myself and in lots of other people. As I get healthier, I just start getting these messages from the body. Hey, we're cool. We're relaxed. We're happy. The cells are happy. And so you feel happy. And when your cells are feeling anxious and unhappy and stressed, you feel that way. So it's kind of a slightly metaphysical chemical thing. Okay, other therapies that could be helpful for anxiety and panic attacks, there are many, I would say, but among the ones that are most well-known are things like biofeedback, which helps you relax. Relaxation therapies, whether they're meditation, massage and gentle body work of all kinds, like craniosacral work, very good. Using things like hot tubs, steam baths, sauna baths, these are very relaxing, even just swimming and anything that's soothing and warm and relaxing, very, very helpful. Things that improve your circulation are helpful. And there's a whole array of newer kind of spin-offs to these sort of basic ones that can be helpful. Things that help you get into your body, things that help you to be present in the present moment, because massage and warm baths. By the way, taking a warm bath in Epsom salts every night, very good. I ended up buying a hot tub. That is great. It is really relaxing. I get so relaxed, like in the evening, I don't want to get out of there and go to bed. So other natural therapies are very helpful, and why not use them? They're available Having pets around has been shown to be helpful. And of course, having all kinds of inspiring and uplifting people and things around to keep you on track is also excellent. Well, we've covered a lot of stuff, and I think that sort of completes what I wanted to go over. I'll just summarize very briefly. We spent a lot of time talking about body chemistry. First, this general idea that as your cells are happy, you'll be happy, and as your cells are stressed, you can feel stressed, even though there's nothing going on. I mean, you can make it up that it's outside of you, but often it's coming from the inside. It's what we call internal stress. And that's what nutrition and body chemistry alteration addresses. Hair analysis is very useful for identifying fast oxidation, slow oxidation, copper imbalance, low energy patterns, which are depression patterns, inversions of sodium-potassium ratio, low energy, for high electrolytes, for low electrolytes, which is associated more with a kind of compulsive pattern, the four highs being an unsteady pattern, hypoglycemic patterns, other toxic metals like mercury and cadmium, arsenic, nickel, another one, nutrient deficiencies, calcium, magnesium, zinc, B vitamins, inositol, choline, taurine, tryptophan, food allergy stuff sometimes, bowel problems with intestinal yeast and other problems causing poisons that are affecting the body. Use of stimulants in the diet like coffee and caffeine and sugar. Other toxic substances, medicines, over-the-counter medicines and other things. Lifestyle factors, sleep, exercise, light, regular living habits, regular meals, deep breathing can help. Mental, emotional, spiritual factors, and other therapies like biofeedback, meditation, relaxation, massage, hot tubs, having pets, and other things. And, you know, if you don't have to do all these therapies, obviously nobody does, but you can have a little sheet and put this information on a sheet. That's what I do, a handout. And you can do the nutrition work, for example, and all the lifestyle, mental, emotional, mention other therapies, other factors. That can be on a handout and just hand it to the person. Say, read this and do as many of these things as you can. And if you have problems, tell me and I'll help you, or I'll refer you to somebody who can do the massage or do the meditation lessons or whatever it takes. So this is an interesting topic, and it's a common one. And this will conclude this tape.